Today, in lieu of a regular class, I'm going to take a series of questions presented by Jai Krishna Das, something in between Brahmacharya and Adhikari. We're not quite sure which. So the first question is, how authentic our scriptures are? Well, they're not really our scriptures, they're Krishna's scriptures. We can say our in as much as we adhere to them. Just like we say our parampara, it means that it's not our property, but we are within that, a member of it, a servant of it. So Shastra is fully authentic. Otherwise there's no use to be a Shastra. Otherwise not a Shastra at all. Shastra means Veda, Veda Shastra. Veda means Vidya, knowledge. If it's not knowledge, then it's of no use. The authenticity of the scriptures is doubted by certain persons. They claim that they are man-made. But actually there's no evidence either way that they're man-made or not man-made. So actually it's a question of faith that we accept them, that Veda Narayana Sakshat, that the Vedas are directly manifested from Narayana, or they are Narayana. So that is a question of faith. It's not blind faith. It's reasonable faith. This is a big topic. What is blind faith and what is reasonable faith? I've discussed this many times. If you see this BVKS media ministry, there are various lectures on this. In Bangalore a few years ago, I went through this thoroughly, this topic of faith in Shastra. There's one lecture on that. There's also another one I gave in the 1980s or early 1990s on why should we believe the Mahabharata, which somehow or other they edited out of the media ministry, but they should put it back in again. That was quite popular because it was discussing, saying how can we believe those things? And so I discussed that in some detail because, you know, you're not the first person in history to ask these questions. Commonly asked questions. So even like many years ago, I gave some exhaustive reply to that. Can we believe the Mahabharata? Who made changes? This is the question. Yeah, that's my question too. Who is that rascal who made changes? Actually, you can't change Shastra. But if someone attempts to, whoever does that is simply a rascal, that's all. Who gave the rights to change it? Well, the only person who can give the right is Bhagavan Narayan himself. There have been interpolations and many, many misinterpretations, but the Shastra itself is perfect. Just like there may be some medicine which is a very effective medicine, or someone may adulterate that. But that doesn't mean that the original medicine is bogus. It's the person who adulterated it is bogus. So there's a story that Shankara met Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva took the form of an old man, and they argued and discussed for more than 10 days, and then Vyasa agreed that Shankara is the right person to preach the Vedanta Sutra. So this is a statement, not a question. It may or may not be true. The followers of Shankaracharya accept it as true. But actually we find in the Shastra itself that Bhagavan Narayan said that Shankara is the right person to preach the Vedanta Sutra in the wrong way. It is stated in Padma Purana that Bhagavan Narayan ordered Lord Shiva to preach Mayavadam Asat Chastram Prachandam Bhodamuchate, to preach Mayavad, which is Asat Shastra. So there's really no such thing as Asat Shastra, just like there's no such thing as Asat Guru, or there's no such thing as bad medicine. Medicine is good. It's beneficial. But sometimes we speak of bad medicine, it means some quack has made it, or like this. Quack. It means a bogus doctor. Self-appointed doctor. So Narayan appointed Lord Shiva to preach Mayavad. There were various reasons for that. One reason was to defeat Buddhism, which was very prominent in India at the time, which was anti-Vedic, was and is. So Shankaracharya preached a philosophy which was very similar to Buddhism, but he established it on the basis of the Vedas. So in this way he re-established the importance of the Vedas. So that's one reason. There are various other reasons which are described in Srila Prabhupada's teachings of Lord Chaitanya for Shankaracharya to preach this actually very inauspicious philosophy. So it may be that Vyas discussed with Shankara, who is the incarnation of Lord Shiva, and said, you are the right person to preach the Vedanta Sutra. That Shankara argued with Vyas, and then Vyas said, you're the right person to preach the Vedanta Sutra in the wrong way. If he had, just like Madhvacharya went later, and he presented his commentary, and Vyas, he asked Vyas for blessings. Is this the right understanding? And Vyas gave it. So if we approach Vyas, the guru, with a challenging mood, then obviously we don't get to understand what he has to say to us, because we're more interested in having him listen to us. We take the position of a superior. So Vyas may have tested him and found out, is he actually expert enough to misrepresent Vedanta? And then having discovered that, he said, all right, now go and do it. The reason for misrepresenting the Vedanta was because people weren't ready for the pure message of Vedanta, which is Krishna to Bhagavan Swayam. People are born in Kali Yuga because they are Kalaha Priya. They like arguing. They don't like to accept the truth. It's sinful people get born in Kali Yuga. So as the overseer of Tamagun, to increase the Tamagun, which is predominant in Kali Yuga, Lord Shiva, as Shankara, preached a philosophy which is very much predominated by Tamagun. In CC, which is often used by devotees to mean Chaitanya Charitamrita, I prefer to use the full name. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada criticized Shankara's commentary, that his commentary on the Vedanta Sutras 42, 43, 44, they are contradictory. Yeah. Certain, Prabhupada criticized that certain of his commentaries, certain commentaries on certain verses are contradictory. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, in doing so, he's following our previous Vaishnava Acharyas in criticizing Shankaracharya on these particular points. So the question is, how could he, Shankaracharya, cheat people with this kind of philosophy? Well, how can anyone cheat anyone with any kind of philosophy? There are so many pseudo-gurus prominent in India today. You know, just practically just by looking at their photo, you can understand their bogus. They don't even have to open their mouth. When they open their mouth, it gets worse. So, you know, all kinds of drivel. Drivel means nonsense, you can say. It's something, it gives something like the idea of, you know, when babies, they slobber and all that stuff comes out of their mouth. Babies go and all the lala in Hindi, what's it called in English? Slobber comes out of their mouth. You know, most people pass stool through their backside, but these bogus gurus, they do it through their mouths. Serious case of verbal diarrhea. I saw this, there was some well-known bogus guru who's said, the aim of my life is to have a smile on everyone's face. You always see him with a picture of a smile behind his big beard. But if he's a bona fide sadhu, he should tell you that this material world is miserable. It's full of birth, death, old age and disease. This idea, you should be positive thinking. Face the challenge of life. It's called the art of living. The challenge is that you're already defeated before you started. You're trying to enjoy life, but you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. So a real sadhu should teach this, but instead he's teaching that you be happy in this material world, which means he's a complete demon and rascal. He's a cheater. People think, oh, you're trying to enjoy life, but you have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. So a real sadhu should teach this, but instead he's teaching that you be happy in this material world, which means he's a complete demon and rascal. People think, oh, he's so nice. He always talks about love and peace and togetherness and harmony. So nice. But he's not teaching you to get about the reality of this material world. Therefore, simply cheating. Now, how is he able to cheat so many people? And not just him. I mean, there's so many of them. So many cheaters. It should be obvious when someone charges you 2,000 rupees for a seminar and they teach you some, you know, pie in the sky, then they're cheating you. Pie in the sky means akasha pushpa, which flower in the sky. In English you say pie in the sky. But people love it. Oh, how wonderful. Because they want to be cheated. They want something cheap. They're not sincere. People are foolish. On every cigarette packet it says smoking causes cancer. And still people buy it and smoke it. They're paying money to get cancer. Is this foolish? So, like this, you know, foolishness is the mass condition of the people of Kali Yuga. The whole advertising industry, billions and trillions of dollars every year, works on the principle that people are stupid. That if you show something good, which the product doesn't give, then people will buy it, even though they know it doesn't give it. They, for instance, in the Western countries, the car tires are mostly sold with pictures of almost naked women. Car tires, yeah. So people see the car tire and the picture of the car tire and the picture of the beautiful woman. So they think, beautiful woman, I want. So some association is connected in their mind. I want beautiful woman, this car tire, beautiful woman. So they buy the car tire. But they don't get the beautiful woman. And they know they're not going to get a beautiful woman. When they buy the car tire, they don't ask, well, where's the beautiful woman? It's just some imagination that somehow or other, if they use this car tire, then beautiful women will like them or something. The women look at their car and say, oh, you're using that tire. Oh, really? So it's foolishness. But it works. So that's an example how the advertising industry works on the basis that people are foolish and they want to be cheated. So almost everything that goes on in the name of preaching religion, especially in what is erroneously called Hindu religion, works on the basis that people are stupid and they want to be cheated. You see, actually Shankaracharya had an elaborate system of philosophy and he was encouraging people to follow Vedic principles of moral life. So, I mean, that's not as grossly cheating as these modern gurus who just say, you know, you do whatever you like, think whatever you like, and you just give me 2,000 rupees and come to my seminar and say, Jai Guru Dev, and then that's the art of living. So if these people can cheat so grossly, then what's surprising that Shankaracharya's cheating philosophy cheats people in a subtle way, less gross manner? The next question I don't understand. What's this about the quadruple expansion? Chaturvyuha, Shankara says they represent the... What's the question actually? He was saying they're allegorical. So the question is that the Vishnu forms, if they're all Bhagavan, why are they not all one? Is it? So what's the question? Well, the jivas are also expansions of Vishnu. Mamai Bangsho Jiva Loke. The Bhagavan Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the jivas are the ansha, or the part of Krishna. But as described in the Varaha Purana, there are two main categories of expansion from Vishnu, namely Vibhinansha and Swangsha, the separated, namely the jivas, and the non-different ones, which are the Vishnu forms. And Lord Shiva, he's in a separate category of his own. He's above the jiva tattvas, but he's not Bhagavan Narayana directly. How are we to understand this? We understand it's described in Shastra. Otherwise, how can we... You can't make any experiments to find out the nature of Lord Shiva. We simply accept because it's described thus in Shastra. And by the acharyas, who by their teachings and their personality demonstrate that Krishna consciousness is reality. We don't accept blindly. The intelligence has to be applied. If we apply our intelligence, we can understand that the Vaishnav Siddhanta, it appeals to the intelligence. That there is the Supreme Lord and He is the Supreme Controller and we are subordinate to Him. The Mayavad idea that all the jivas are the same as Bhagavan, it doesn't appeal to basic common sense. Then Lord Shiva is also Krishna's expansion for annihilation. Then why He is a different tattva? Again, it's, you know. And how Lord Ananta is Vishnu tattva? How is He? He is. It's not a matter of experimentation. We accept the Shastric conclusion. Then the next question. Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishvara Puri. Then why he got Chaitanya, which belongs to the Shankara Parampara? The name Chaitanya was given to him by Keshav Bharati. Not by Ishvara Puri. Ishvara Puri didn't change his name. Ishvara Puri gave Vishvamba Mishra, as was his official name, the Vaishnavi Diksha. Ishvara Puri didn't change his name, his official name. He was known as Nimai Pandit, or his official name was Vishvamba Mishra. So when Ishvara Puri awarded Nimai Pandit Mantra Diksha, he didn't change his name. Then when he took sannyas, then he was given the name Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Mahaprabhu said he is from the Bharati Sampradaya. He got an Ekadanda. Then how can we say we are Brahma Madhva Gaurya Vaishnavas? Well, that's clearly explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, the authorized biographies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas for the specific purpose of preaching Krishna consciousness. Because people would respect him, as they were not respecting him. They just thought he was just an ordinary person. So that they would listen to what he said and bow down before him, they would be benefited because he's the Supreme Lord by bowing down before him. So he accepted sannyas. At that time in Bengal, the only kind of sannyas that was known was in the Shankara Sampradaya. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas from Keshav Bharati, who was in the Shankara Sampradaya. But just at the time he was to take sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself told the mantra to Keshav Bharati, which mantra he was to take. So practically, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated Keshav Bharati and made him his own disciple before going through the act of accepting sannyas from him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking the role of a disciple of anyone is that we can understand it's his lila, because he himself is the source of all knowledge and the object of all knowledge. So the next question. Sri Madhvacharya didn't touch the chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Brahma being illusioned, the Brahma Vimohana Lila. He is our Acharya. Then why do we read this chapter if we accept Guru, Sadhu and Shastra? Yeah, we accept Madhva as our Acharya, but we are the Madhva Gaurya Vaishnav Sampradaya. So there is a difference between the Madhva Sampradaya and the Madhva Gaurya Sampradaya. Actually, there are many differences, or you could say that the Gaurya Sampradaya expands. Beginning with Madhavendra Puri, it expands the concepts that Madhvacharya gave. Sripad Madhvacharya didn't want to comment on the Brahma Vimohana Lila because the idea that our guru, Brahma, is illusioned. He didn't want to touch that. He's upholding the principle of respect for Guru. So by not commenting on the... Actually, he simply didn't comment on it. He didn't say... He shouldn't say that we shouldn't read it. He simply didn't comment on it. But by doing that, he gave the indication that we should be very cautious in how we see our gurus. But the acharyas in the Gaurya line, they do comment on this and we do discuss it. without any disrespect to Lord Brahma, rather glorifying his exalted position in that he is able to directly participate in Krishna's pastimes. But the acharyas in the Gaurīya line, they do comment on this, and we do discuss it, without any disrespect to Lord Brahma, rather glorifying his exalted position in that he is able to directly participate in Krishna's pastimes. That Brahma, his illusion, is it's not like the illusion of the ordinary living beings, but that's directly enacted by Bhagavan Krishna's yoga maya, or internal potency. So Madhvacharya, that he didn't comment on that, by doing so he gives us an instruction. That doesn't mean that that chapter should be expunged from Shastra. It's given by Vyasadeva. So different acharyas give different contributions at different times. We find that sometimes the, you know, even among the Gaurīya acharyas, there may be some disagreement or different statements. But if they make a different statement, they'll do so not in the mood of wanting to correct their previous acharya, always with the greatest respect for the previous acharyas. It's like a difference between two-dimensional vision and three-dimensional vision. Reality is multifaceted. So all the stories and narrations in Shastra, I presume you mean, other than death, is like illusory. There is no direct proof. It seems like speculations. How could people believe this theory? What do you mean to say? That all the statements in Shastra, they seem like... I don't understand. Maybe you can say it more clearly. Well, generally we don't know what birth they will take. But if Padma Purana gives a specific instance, then we accept that. You say there is no direct proof, but the Shastra itself is proof. If you say there's no direct proof that we can't measure it empirically, that's true. We don't know what happened. You know, someone, some thousands or millions of years ago, it's described in Padma Purana. In one life they were in one situation, they were in another. How are you going to? What are you going to do? Where's the question of any empiric proof of such a thing? Your great 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 grandfather was fond of idlis. There's no direct proof. We can say that's anuman because, you know, people in Tamil Nadu have been fond of idlis for generations. So there's direct proof is not always applicable. If you want scientific proof of what empiricists would call direct proof of reincarnation, then read the works, read the books of Dr. Ian Stevenson, who died about a year ago, who spent his whole life investigating reincarnation. Dr. Ian Stevenson. Stevenson. And he produced hundreds of cases of what you could say of research conducted in a scientific manner, in a manner that would stand up to sociological or anthropological standards, although it's applied in a different discipline, and came up with hundreds and thousands of cases which indicate reincarnation. So the scientific establishment hasn't denied his work, they just ignore it, that's all. They haven't tried to give any scientific refutation of it, they simply ignore it. Because they're not scientists, they're dogmatists. They accuse religionists of blind faith and dogmatism, but actually scientists have blind faith and they're dogmatic. So people say, we believe in science, we trust in science, because we know it's true, because the scientists have told us so. Okay, let's have a scientific quiz. What are the planets? What are the planets in our solar system? Anyone? Quick, 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 quick. Kon banega kropati. You all lost. You're not quick enough. Okay, you're in the technical line. Tell us. Okay. No, not the sun. I'm saying according to the scientific, so-called science. Solar system means it's, we're talking about modern science. You don't know? Anyone? Earth, Venus, Mercury, Saturn, Mars, Jupiter. These are the ones which are visible to the naked eye. And after they started making telescopes, they also discovered Uranus, Neptune, and
Pluto.
Pluto ki jai. Okay, you can say all that in Tamil. That means, Bhumi, Shani, Shukra, Mangal, Guru, all these. Uranus, Neptune. Okay. So Pluto's the one which is furthest away, and it's very small, right? And you can't see it with the naked eye. Well, recently, dear friends who have great faith in science, we have some information for you about Pluto. We have some new discovery, scientific discovery about Pluto. By the way, Pluto is the Greek god of death. So anyway, now they say, well, Pluto's not really a planet at all. It's just a mass of coagulated dust and ice that's spinning out there somewhere. It's more like an oversized asteroid. Asteroid means something which would have been a planet if it would got bigger, but it's just like a lump of rock that's floating around somewhere out there. Chinna graham, you can say. Small planet. You see, and there's no word. You have to speak English for the scientific discussions. There's a word, asteroid. It means it's not really a planet, it's just some lump of rock or something floating out there, you know, a few light years away, a few million light years away. Not millions of light years away. We're talking about inside the solar system. So anyway, there are like thousands and thousands of things like Pluto they've discovered, which are floating around there. Some are bigger than Pluto, some are smaller than Pluto, just lumps of, this is what they say, lumps of rock and ice and dust that's all coagulated. So it's not really correct to call Pluto a planet in the same sense as, you know, Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, and all of these. They were wrong. In other words, they're wrong. Pluto is not what they call a planet. So it's a bit of a, you know, kick in the backside for those people who have great faith in science. Self-inflicted kick in the backside. For people who say, you know, we have faith in science and science is so great. We discovered a planet that, you know, through our telescope that no one knew about before. And then all of a sudden, sorry about that, it's not really a planet at all. And there are so many things like that. When I was a child, there were so many children being born without arms and legs, because they discovered a, you know, fantastic new drug which, was it a contraceptive or something to help women in their menstrual period or something. And they were taking it, and the result of this was they were giving birth to children without hands and legs. It's called thalidomide. No, a drug. It was a pill, in the form of a pill. So the scientist said, sorry. Anyway, we still have great faith in science. We'll give you another drug. So they discovered with the other drugs, they're not so spectacular as thalidomide, but over a longer period of use, they just give you, you know, not anything spectacular like no hands and legs children, but just boring breast cancer or ovary cancer. So people believe in science. We believe in Shastra. It's up to you. You choose what you like. Science is a cult of people who believe in things because scientists tell them. And genuine religion means to accept the words of the unchanging message of Shastra as delivered through acharyas. There's all kinds of scientific knowledge in Shastra. Just like in Shastra, there's a astrology is astronomy. Well, anyway, it's the same word. Is a highly developed science. Jyotish is the... According to the Vedic science of Jyotish, you can calculate, for instance, the time of sunrise tomorrow in Salem. So, certainly they had advanced knowledge of the movements of the heavenly bodies and of mathematics to be able to do that. And they could predict lunar eclipses, solar, everything. So, if you're scientifically minded and open-minded, which the two things don't usually go together, but if you are actually scientifically minded and open-minded, then we shouldn't reject the Vedic conclusion very easily. Anyway, much research is needed on all these different points. It is a fact that people in the modern age are very much enamored by science, and there are innumerable misunderstandings about the science, or about the knowledge in Shastra. The Krishna Conscious Movement is not a sectarian or dogmatic religious movement. It is meant for presenting the truth. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Everyone in this world is on the platform of relative truth, which means illusion at best. Sorry, the relative truth, which is mostly manifests as illusion. So practically to present the supreme absolute truth, we have to demonstrate to people how their relative conceptions are not really truth at all. Just like people are enamored by science. There's no doubt that, just like for instance, computers have made a tremendous impact on our modern way of life. So a lot of intelligence has gone into producing them. And but for all that, you know, for all that computers have got to offer us, they don't, or computers, or medicine, or noisy auto rickshaws, for all the things they have to offer us, they still don't touch the really important point of how to get free from birth, death, old age, and disease. So even if science can tell us many things which are true about the universe, we're not saying that everything they say is false, but still they're missing the point of what the actual purpose of life is. So a tremendous amount of work is required in research and writing and preaching to demonstrate how Krishna is the highest truth and the ultimate object of all inquiry. Now, just like, for instance, I was talking about the misconceptions propagated by Shankaracharya. Now, I was speaking from what we could say is the standard Gaudiya understanding. But we wouldn't expect any follower of Shankaracharya to accept that. So we would have to go much deeper and examine all the different concepts in detail to show that what we are presenting is correct. Gaudiya Vaishnav understanding is summarized as follows. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshataneya Tadhama Vrindavanam. The Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, He is worshipable. He is the son of Nanda Maharaj, and his land, Vrindavan, is as worshipable as he. Ramya kachid upasana vrajavadhu vargena ya kalpita. The topmost method of worship of Bhagavan is that which is followed or discovered by the Vrajagopis. Srimad Bhagavatam pramanam amalam. Srimad Bhagavat is the only completely pure evidence. Prema pumarto mahan. And the real goal, or the topmost goal, or the greatest goal or purpose of human life is to develop ecstatic love for Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam. This is the opinion or the perspective given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tatradara nahpara. And we accept this as supreme. We worship this. We respect this as supreme. So that's all right for us. But to establish all these points, there are hundreds and thousands of conflicting theories. And to establish these points, we have to understand philosophically the supremacy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. All right, well, that's the conclusion. Chant Hare Krishna.